What would save the world?
Veganism.
Gun control.
Ending capitalism.
Consensus.
More guns.
Nonviolent communication.
Energy.
Green energy.
Spirituality.
More regulation.
Emotional education.
End the war on
drugs. Libertarianism.
Socialism.
I'm Tuke Edelo, and this is
What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in to What Would Save the World. Today, we're having a very arts-focused episode, unlike last week where we just talked politics the whole time and I, you know, got very angry about anarchism. Yay, angry anarchism. What could be more typical? So we're going to talk about Frigid Festival. Frigid NYC is a theater festival that goes on at Horse Trade Theater Group's theaters, the Crane Theater near St. Mark's. You might be familiar with them. They're both in the East Village, and they have a great winter festival called Frigid. And I have a couple people here who have shows that are going to be in this festival. It's going to be in the next couple weeks. I think it goes all the way to March, right? The beginning of March?
Yeah, March 5th.
March 5th, yeah. So I love Frigid Festival. I technically work at Horse Trade, and every year I see amazing shows at Frigid, so I'm very excited to go see every single one of these shows. All right, so why don't we start with you, Mara, or Mara, right?
Mara.
Okay, so why don't you tell us a little bit about your show?
My show is called Buyer's Remorse. It is about a solo road trip that I took in 2015 all around the United States. So it's mirroring that with my sexual history. It's a lot about sexual liberation and the taboos that we come in contact with as women and, you know, sexual creatures.
Yeah, awesome. So, Courtney, you gonna do your thing?
I have a show. It's called 18 Days, 48 Girls, which chronicles the 18 days that I ran an all-girls summer camp in Pennsylvania for teenagers 12 to 17. There are no cell phones, a lot of emotions. A lot of feelings, all female staff, and it was my first time doing that as a result of being fired, so I thought this is the place to find myself, camp. I went to camp as a kid, way different now.
Oh, I'm sure. It's like, well, I can't go on Facebook, so I can't text my boyfriend I met on the internet.
That's actually something someone said to me.
Really? Oh, my God. Okay, we're going to get into all that a little bit, but I want to hear from you, Bree. I want to hear about your show.
My show is called Sam's Club. That's S-A-H-M for stay-at-home mom. And the show is fairly simple. It follows five moms in a Brooklyn park one day where just shit goes wrong.
Yeah, okay, we're going to talk about that. I don't know why there's a phone ringing right now. I'm going to answer just to be a little obnoxious right now because this is going to be hilarious.
Maybe it's a call-in.
I don't know what it is.
Somehow they knew.
Hello?
Yeah, this is
your number? Yeah, there's nobody actually taking a live... There's no live show to call into right now. Could I ask you who this is?
When do you have the live show?
Other times, but not right now. I'm actually doing a pre-record right now. But thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate it. Bye. Yeah, so
guys, nice. My hero.
So now we can have a little bit of comedy right now. just I you know, I enjoy being a little passive aggressive here and there. Oh no. Anyway, so I want to keep talking about Sam's Clubs. I feel like you got cut off there.
Oh, that's all right. So it's a pretty basic setup of five moms, Brooklyn moms of varying you know, social, economic standing, and they've got a new girl who's a divorcee who's come from Ohio. So they kind of school her.
On how to be a New York mom?
On how to be a New York mom. And there's one dad, because you need to have a little eye candy in the show, am I right?
A little eye candy?
Am I right?
Sure.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's pretty straightforward, except for underneath it becomes very farcical, but underneath the comedy is a lot about women's relationships and what we do to each other, especially around being mothers.
So there seems to be like this very interesting like link between all your shows, all about like women's sexuality, what it's like to be a young girl, what's it like to be a mother. Do you feel like there is this like women aren't allowed to get out of specific roles they're supposed to have in the society? I mean, we can and we do, but do you know what I'm saying? Do you feel like
like, okay, so when you're talking about, like, your sexual, like, finding your sexual liberation, mm-hmm. like, what led you to that? Like, do you feel like there was people, were people trying to tell you that you had to be a certain way your whole life?
And... Well, not quite. I mean, my family has always been incredibly, incredibly open, and I mean, I come from outrageously liberal parents, which I'm so grateful for, but... I feel, for me, what it actually came out of, what my sexual liberation came out of, was actually a really bad, horrible relationship that landed me in a mental facility.
Oh, I've had one of those, too.
Yeah. So I, after that, I just sort of hopped into every bed that I could find, and through that learned that I, that was fine, that that's okay, that I am allowed to be a woman and be a sexual creature, and still be true to myself.
Do you feel like you thought you weren't supposed to be that at some point?
Oh, like... yeah. I mean, he, the guy that I was with was, it was, sex was very vanilla. he was a germaphobe, so he never even went down on me.
Ew.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone's saying boo. It's so true. Yeah. No, exactly. So, a lot of it came out of me wanting to experience other things.
Yeah. Great. So I'm going to hear, so like, I want to hear, like, a lot about, like, what is, what's it like to go to camp with millennial girls? Or, like, not even millennial. Are they post-millennial now? Like, what? They're... Who knows?
Well, this is the intrigue. I was the oldest. I was 30 when I ran the camp. And my staff, there was about a 9-year age difference. So my staff was a different generation from me that was a different generation from the 12 to 17-year-olds. So hypothetically, we had three groups of people all trying to relate to one another and be in charge at the same time. So I'm being in charge of women who were allowed to, for example, have their cell phones in front of the girls. And I was like, you know, that's really not appropriate, guys. Like, you're teasing them. They're not allowed to. And you're just, you're on Facebook and they're just lingering and just lurking.
It's so oppressive.
And somehow my older self was like, why don't you just know that? That you shouldn't be in front of them that way. And then also dealing with parents who are then older than me.
Mm-hmm.
So as the buffer between students, staff, and parents.
Everybody was women except for maybe male fathers.
Yeah. And
you had no male staff at the camp.
No male staff. We had one. We had one campus security guard, Barry, who would occasionally visit, and the younger girls were obsessed with him.
Oh, I'm sure they
were. In the way that, like, 12-year-old girls become obsessed with their grandfather, they loved Barry. They wanted to start a fire to prove they could stop, drop, and roll for Barry. Like, that was...
Oh, my God.
Adorable and horrifying all at once. I was like...
We have to please the men.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, the parents were actually, on average, 10 to 12 years older than me. A lot of more... They paid cash for this $4,000 camp. So they had to be affluent to send them to this. So,
or rich, really good at scholarship, at campership applications.
Yeah. So I'm now dealing with people who are older than me. Weird funneling on either sides. And it was just kind of me as the nexus between all of it.
Mm-hmm.
But what I find interesting is a bad relationship with a male supervisor sent me to camp.
Oh, look at that.
Really? What do you mean?
So I had been a grant writer when I moved to New York City. It was my moved to New York City job for a man who said that I'd, you know, given the best interview you'd ever heard, hired me on the spot. And some time later, 3-4 months later, that wasn't quite the case.
Oh.
And he started saying I was subpar and incompetent and I was personally disappointing and wrecked me. Right? Because there's a man who said I was good at something and then I suddenly wasn't and I didn't know why. And that's how I ended up needing to find a job or a place to get me back. And that's how I ended up at camp, was a bad relationship with my male boss.
God.
Do you feel like there's this, like, element of women feeling like they need to meet the approval of men? Do you feel like that seems to be, like a pattern here that I'm hearing already?
My therapist, like, would be 100% on board with that.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about how, like, a shitty relationship pushed you to go on this adventure, and you're talking about how, like, a shitty boss pushed you to go to this camp, and even at the camp, the little girls want to please the one guy. So, like, in a mother role, like, what do you feel about the way, like, men interact with mothers? Do you think there's, like, I guess what I'm asking is, like, do you think that there's something about motherhood that, like, men don't understand?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I want to hear a little bit about you.
Absolutely. Well, I and one of the functions that the dad plays in my play is the bar for him is so much lower. The bar of parental success is so much lower than what all the women have to clear.
Like, what do you mean?
Meaning, you know, I mean, they talk about how, like, you know, we are expected, you know, you get a new baby in the house and it's your first few days. And as the mom, you're diapering and trying to figure out breastfeeding and it's extraordinarily stressful. And every little part of you is invested in how well you can do those things. And the learning curve on that, they don't tell you, is incredibly steep. And on top of that, you're bleeding profusely. You know, things are happening to your body that are nuts and and gross, and you feel terrible, and that stomach does not go away. And but yet, if your husband diapers the baby once, every woman that is over your age is like, oh my God, he's such a good dad. Look at the way
he changed the diaper once.
I know my husband never would have diapered you you were a baby.
I picture this woman.
Yeah, and so it's like you just feel like I'm fucking bleeding and like rivers, like there's chunks of things coming out of me and you know and he's like makes me a sandwich and he's fucking God.
Yeah, I actually hear that. There's such a low bar for, like, men in general. I mean, look who our president is.
Oh, right. God.
I mean, yeah. I mean, we're going to get into that, of course, because I can't go a single episode without talking shit about him.
Okay. Let's talk shit about him.
So, that leads me to a thing. So, especially in today's world where, you know, I thought Hillary was all right. I wanted Bernie. But regardless, like, we ended up with, like, pretty much the worst case scenario. Like, if we had had Jeb Bush, I would have been like, well, that sucks.
At least it wasn't Donald Trump.
Yeah, at least you're smarter than your brother. I mean, like, you can speak Spanish. Whoa!
Put on a poncho.
Yeah. I mean, no, but, like, really, I mean, I remember when I was watching the Republican debates and being like, wow, like, Jeb Bush can speak Spanish. That's a lot more than I can say for, like, white people in America who aren't, like, first or second generation. He's bilingual. He must be smart-ish. I mean, ish.
Yeah, the bar is so much lower.
The bar is so low. And Hillary Clinton, even though I do have my issues with Hillary Clinton, if it had been Elizabeth Warren, we would be having a different conversation. I would have been like, fuck yeah. But, like, with Hillary Clinton, I was a little bit like, well, I just don't agree with your foreign policy. I think that you lie about GMOs. Like, can you please? Anyway, but regardless, she would have been way better than this motherfucker or any of those guys, pretty much. Like, yeah. Any of those Republican guys, she would have been better than them. And that's, like, exactly how much higher the bar is for women and everywhere. So I guess my question is, how do you feel about the importance of women's stories being told right now?
Oh my God, it's incredibly important. I mean, there's something that I was talking to about this, but they were asking me what, like, my like ideal vision for American theater would be. And I said diversity, and I didn't just mean diversity in color and gender and everything. I mean diversity in everything, in topics. Like, you know, why is there not a play where a deaf transgendered woman falls in love with a developmentally disabled cis female, you know, and I would go see that play.
Yeah.
I would go see the fuck out of that play.
I mean, and I think about it, growing up, all the characters I wanted to play were men.
Ah.
And that kind of, like, screwed up that, like, there's not that. I mean, no, that's not true. I would love to play Blanche DuBois. I would love to play Maggie in Cat in a Hot Tin Roof. I'm just going to say Tennessee Williams. I love Tennessee Williams. Mm-hmm. But there's, like, musical theater specifically, though.
Yeah.
There are most of the roles I wanted to play were male roles. Like, I wanted to be Che really bad.
Yeah.
I wanted to be Seymour. I don't know why. I just wanted to play the male roles. And what about you? I want to hear about Courtney. I want to hear, like, how do you feel about women's stories being told, especially because your show is all about girls.
It is all about girls. And I frequently find, I go by the idea of, like, I do storytelling. So my show is true stories and sometimes funny, sometimes sad.
Is it a one-woman show?
It is one-woman. Okay. So it's just me and sometimes some pictures, because words don't always do justice.
Mm-hmm.
And I find in discussions with people that I have to somehow justify my show a little harder than some counterparts of mine who might just be like, I was a male camp director, and be like, bro, that's crazy. And instead, I have to add the element of, well, let me think about why these girls might be in the current predicament they are as having social anxiety disorders at 6 years old. And I have to somehow clue
in. Is
that
a thing?
It is a thing. Oh, some of those, 50% of my girls were on heavy medication.
Like, are you serious?
Yeah, Paxil, Xanax. Like
Paxil. Nobody should be on Paxil. Nobody. Like, actually, if any of you read the side effects of that shit, like, nobody should be on Paxil.
And I'm not at all a licensed clinician, but the form for medical was like one pill in the morning, one pill at night. So yeah, these girls came, I say problematic, but different than when I went to camp. It was
when I went to camp, everybody just wanted to fuck the counselors.
Yeah,
the male
I had
counselors.
Candy money. Like, that's what I went with, not pill boxes.
Yeah,
and
you were on meds growing up with me. Like, you had to be like schizo. Like,
right, and so I feel like I have to add certain elements that provide a broader picture as opposed to me just being able to be myself. That that male counterparts can, particularly in storytelling, sometimes get away personality-wise. As in with even when you say related to Hillary or Elizabeth, you have to be more than just the personality. You have to have the message. And I grew
up... Why not just the message? You know, that drives me nuts.
Yeah.
It's like, I wish we could vote for president or all candidates with just a list of their views, and that's it.
Yeah, we don't know what they look like. We don't know what they sound like. Just tell me what they believe.
What they voted for, right?
Yeah.
That's
just tell
all
me
I
what
need.
They believe.
Their voting history, yeah.
And so I am... It's interesting, you wanted to be male individuals in theater. I grew up, the love of my life is Edith Wharton.
Mm.
And I did a play about her because I thought she's an underrepresented female. And so
I don't even know who that is.
First Pulitzer Prize winning female author. Age of Innocence.
Incredible.
I have a quote from her on my arm. I love her so dearly. And she, for me, is like a underrepresented, unknown powerhouse of a woman who has a crazy life. And I found that because of her, and I grew up in comic books, and I grew up in theater, that I won't tell a story that has men as the main character.
Mm-hmm.
I do a show about the Golden Girls. I want to grow up and be Bea Arthur.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I would be Bea Arthur.
Like,
yes.
That's where my head is now, quite consciously.
Yeah. Purposefully.
Purposefully. In 20 years ago, 10 years ago, you couldn't have told me that was going to be me. I didn't think I'd had to purposely be all female. Mm. And pushed an agenda mm-hmm. to a degree. But now I'm like, yep.
Doing it.
And I'm not going to apologize.
No.
So how do you feel about the stories of, like, mothers being told? Do you feel like there's, like, I feel like there's, like, whenever I think about mothers or, like, the way people view mothers in the society, I feel like there's such, like, a narrow bubble.
I'd agree with you there. I mean, I think our view, collective view of motherhood and what makes a mother, what makes a good mother, is so incredibly limited. I also feel, and part of where I'm going with my work, especially in terms of this, and it took me a long time because I didn't want to tell mom stories because I just, you know, I write other things, but as soon as you write about moms, then you're the next Irma Bombeck. No, I'm fucking not. I have other things to say.
Right.
And it's not, and people put mothers into this box of like, all you're concerned about is, you know, how to wipe your kids' noses the best and that your world is incredibly small. And that is not the case at all.
That's ridiculous. I would think that being a mother would be one of like the largest things, like in terms of like, if I had a child, I'd be spending so much time thinking about like, if the little things I do, how it's going to impact who they are as a person, especially if I had a son. If I had a son, my whole deal would be like, how do I not make him like some toxic masculine asshole?
Well, I think the other thing is that we also place the burden of how our children turn out are solely everything is the mother's fault.
If a boy turned out to be homosexual, people would say, oh, you spent too much time with your mother. She mothered you too much.
Right.
That's such bullshit.
When actually scientifically, I mean, you know, people are obviously, like, people are born gay, and you know, right. But there's all the truth is there is like a whole spectrum. Like, I've read accounts of people who are like, I was not gay, but then I became gay. Da, da, da. But something I have noticed is that a lot of people I know who are gay, their father left or something. Oh. Do you know what I mean? So it wouldn't be like they spent too much time with their mother. It's that their father wasn't around. Mm. Do you know what I'm saying? Or like the person who was the same gender wasn't there. So there was this
interesting.
Like, which, and obviously that's not, I mean, I don't want anybody to think, I think that that's like what makes somebody gay. I think that being gay, I think all of this shit, I actually don't care how someone becomes gay. Like, I actually don't give a shit about that. It's like, is someone gay and are they happy with their life?
Yeah, are you happy and are you safe?
Yeah, that is something I've noticed, though. Like, a lot of gay men that I know, their father was not present. That is something I've noticed. But anyway, you go back to how people feel like their mother, people, everything's the mother's fault.
Well, I mean, and I think that we as women, and when you, especially now, there's been this shift in my generation of women who, you know, were raised thinking, oh, I could do anything. I could be president or whatever. And then all of a sudden there's been this bizarre shift where being a mother is now the most important thing that you can ever, will ever do. And it becomes all consuming.
So there's been a shift back to that?
Totally. Hmm. Totally. And I feel that women, and part of my screaming is I feel like we play an active part in our own oppression by buying into this very narrow view of what makes a good mother. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think this is very specifically a white lady problem. I think it's a white lady problem.
In what way?
There are women of color in my play, but the most intense feelings of needing to conform, of needing to do the right thing, to need to say the right thing, to make the right parenting decisions, to be on top of, you know, all the pop parenting stuff, is all a bunch of white women there's a whole section where, you know, everything that happens in the play and goes wrong is due to a parenting decision, and the women talk about each other each other's back.
Of course they do.
You know, they're like, oh, we're here for you, I love you. And as soon as she's like, did you fucking see what she just did? Like, I wouldn't have done that. And you know, and I think that we, it's become like this little self-policing bomb. Mm-hmm. That we all of a sudden we've grabbed this idea and tried to make this idea of what a good mother is, and it's sort of this monster of June Cleaver. You know, it's like we think it's a more empowered version of that 50s mom.
It's totally empowered. Yeah, that's
right.
And do you think this is mostly a white lady thing?
I totally think so.
Do you think it's like, okay, this is gonna be like a whole other thing, but do you think like white people in general, I mean, not like, you know, entire everybody, but I don't want to have to do like a hashtag not all white people, I don't want to fuck that, but like, do you think that white people feel the need to, like, decide on what something is and what it means? Because we've been given so much, like,
we
dominance.
Define normal.
We get to define normal.
We
or
get
something
to
like that.
Define normal.
Unfortunately.
So yeah.
I mean, it's dying. You know,
Thank God.
Although, apparently I was wrong. I thought all the bigots were dying out. But I guess I was wrong because I see. And you know, but here's the thing. Like, now when I take the subway, if I see somebody who looks like a little Aryan man, I am more afraid of him than anybody else on the train. No, like, really, I've been starting to be like, yo, you look like you could be a Nazi. Like, I don't know. I've started to become afraid of white men, like, a lot. I don't. It's actually really weird.
I don't think it's unreasonable in the sense of if you look statistically, the homegrown, air quotes, terrorist is typically now a white male individual in the United States. And so just the media, broad term media, but when you see that attached over and over again, shootings and just
abductions,
and I don't think it's unreasonable as a female to just feel slightly under siege mm-hmm. by just that sense of otherness.
Yeah, and I'm also openly anarchist Jew, so I get a little nervous sometimes with a radio show. So I'm like, oh no, do they know something about me? Who's that guy? Oh man, I'm so paranoid these days. This is a time of extreme paranoia.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, why don't we just talk about that for a minute, like unrelated to shows, if you're down, because again, you're listening to What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm here every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m. If you like Radio Free Brooklyn, if you like that I can say fuck on the radio, if you like that I can talk about pretty much whatever I want on here, you can go to patreon.com/radiofreebrooklyn and you can help fund our freeform community radio. But we're going to talk about, so how do you feel about this change in American culture? Like this giant, I feel like this has like been a huge shift. Do you feel like that? Like it's like overnight. It was very surprising. Maybe it wasn't a surprise, because I keep thinking to myself, like, oh, we kept saying, oh, you white men have too much power, and they're like, no, we don't. And we're like, well, actually, let's show you exactly how much power we have. You know what I'm saying? Like, it like turned around. But how do you also, and attached to that question, we can talk about how do you think that theater can affect this time period or the arts?
So I would say I think that it's been there for a long time. This paranoia has been there for a long time, but a lot of us have not had to deal with it. Because I was talking to a lot of my friends of color after the election happened, and they were like, yeah, did you expect anything else? Of course this fucking happened. Of course it did. They're like, do you know where you live? It's like all of a sudden, a lot of white people were like, oh, fuck. Mm-hmm. This is the world I live in.
For real. I had
no idea. And the way that I think it can affect change, that theater can affect change in this, I mean, goddamn, the artists are the ones who can start revolutions so easily. I mean, look at what like Cheeto in Chief responded after Mike Pence went to Hamilton. You know, I mean, even just that, the fact that he was insulted by a group of artists speaking truth to power.
And they didn't even say anything insulting.
No, they didn't
like,
say
at
a
all.
Damn thing insulting.
They were
incredibly
so
respectful.
They were like too classy for my taste. I was like, he is in a Broadway theater. If you walk, I mean, in my opinion, you walk into any theater at all, you were in a gay space. I don't even care if anybody in the theater is gay. Like, you are in a gay space.
You are in a safe haven for everyone of every color, gender, religion, orientation, everything. And you better be ready to be fucking preached at.
Yeah, you better. You can't be like, oh, blah, 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 like, gay reparative therapy, gay shock therapy, and walk into a Broadway theater. Like, what the hell?
I mean, what I will say, I don't like him at all, preface, but at least he responded, like, in a measured manner.
I mean,
at least he didn't freak out on Twitter, but I still fucking hate the dude and I want to bomb the White House, but I'm not actually going to do
We're
it.
We're not
going
to bomb the White
not
House.
I'm not going to do that.
But, oh my God, sometimes I get in things on this radio show where I'm like, kill Nazis, kill Nazis. I'm not going to kill Nazis, but kill Nazis, kill Nazis.
Somebody takes it upon themselves.
I mean,
I'm not going to hate it.
I mean, punch Nazis. I was at this this protest last night. There's this protest that happens for Black Lives Matter. It's just like a march that happens every week, and there was a chant. I'll have to find out what it was. It was really funny. But what I was gonna say is that what you were talking about white people being like, oh, I can't believe this happened. And I'm like, well, yeah, it like got worse, but it was never really that great. Like, you know, like Obama deported like 3 million people. It just so happens that now Donald Trump has like ICE cops in random places in New York. So it's gotten worse, but it doesn't mean that like Obama was like some saint that didn't deport people or like didn't cause problems in the Middle East that didn't. I mean, personally, I just don't think presidents or like having a singular leader is rational. I don't think that makes any sense. Like to have one person in charge of all that. I mean, obviously we have Congress. I don't think it fucking makes any sense.
Congress doesn't do shit though.
Yeah, I think they to have like one figurehead is like a little ridiculous and a little like archaic, honestly. But that's just my opinion. So I want to hear from you. So how do you feel about this crazy time period, and what do you think about how theater and the arts can influence the progression towards a better world?
I'm fundamentally bereft. All the time. There is an underlying somberness, quite frankly, that now inhibits everything that I do.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, for real.
The places that I go and the people that I see. I question people that I see. I have cut off people that I know. And it's an active choice in those situations. I'm very big on David Foster Wallace's, consider the lobster and this is water, and trying to think of the other side. I can't.
I can't fathom the other side.
And
it's not that, it's not even like that simple anymore. You know, it's like, yeah. I can even like, okay, so I'm like ridiculously pro-choice, but it's like, if someone's like, they're pro-life, I bug up a little bit like, okay, you can be pro-life, but you can't tell me what to do.
Right.
You know, like, I can like understand the other side to a point.
Right.
But it's gotten so crazy. Like, I can understand, like, Republicans being like, blah, 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 like, minimum wage doesn't work because my family. Actually, there was a play that I saw at Horse Trade called The Debate. And it was actually done by a dance company, but they, like, created this theater that was about the elections. And somebody came out and did, like, a monologue as a Republican about how Donald Trump is not what they believe in as a Republican. But they think that minimum wage would cause their family to lose a lot of their employees, and their family runs an independent grocery store and employs so many people in the area who wouldn't have jobs otherwise, but they can only afford to pay minimum wage. And I was like, okay, that's actually like a real story, like, that I can like hear and be like, well, I think they deserve more money, but like, if they couldn't have a job otherwise, like, that's like a real problem where I can hear that and like see where you're coming from. But like, it's gotten so crazy that I can't even see that these days.
Well, it's almost as if the Republican Party, I mean, it's not the Republican Party of old. It's not the party of like
the alt-right.
Exactly. It's not. Yeah. It's not the party of fiscal responsibility, air quotes, anymore. It's the
opposition.
It's the opposition. Yeah. It's yeah. And the oppressor at times.
It is. When Melissa McCarthy came out on the first one, there's something that I think the audience entirely missed that I loved. And this is why I think art is very important. And this is what we collectively have to do. She said, Donald Trump went on the national TV. And that one sentence blew me away.
Wait, what was it?
She said, as Spicer, that Donald Trump went on the national TV today. And there, and you know what that means, and I know what that means, and not to drive it to my show, but I do think about the 12-year-old girls who are constantly on their phone, and they have no self-awareness, and their family isn't helping to provide that for them because they're in that Upper West Side bubble that doesn't need to look around because they're going to be okay. And I think, yo, that's crazy though, right? Like, Donald Trump is on, there's one national TV now, and it is Donald Trump's mouthpiece. And so art has to continue to point those things out emphatically. And, you know, Samantha Bee.
I love her.
I love Samantha Bee. You know, Trevor Noah, John Oliver's just returned.
I think Trevor Noah's just okay, but that's my opinion.
I'm just willing to have anybody at this point. No,
honestly,
I hear you. And anybody who's just... I watch Randy Rainbow on YouTube make parody videos about Kellyanne Conway. If it's just somebody pointing it out and then we collectively point it out together,
it
makes me feel better, even if I don't necessarily believe it's going to push the line.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the start, is agreeing to point these things out, even if it doesn't get a laugh, even if that audience missed it.
So I stopped doing comedy for the most part. I'm like, fuck your laughs. I don't want your laughs, and fuck your bro comedy. But I want to hear from you more, Bree.
Well, I was going to say that I think that, you know, I don't overemphasize the, you know, like, how great everything's going to be because of art. You know, I'm like, I don't want to overemphasize, like,
yeah,
or
good.
Make us so fucking self-important.
Right.
Sure. But what I feel is important is that seeking joy, and it is an act of rebellion in times like these, that finding space to be funny, to be joyful in times where they're trying to take everything away from you is like, fuck you, I can still laugh.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do it right in your face.
For real.
Now, can I ask
that.
You a question about that?
Go for it.
I just think it's very interesting. Because just talking about women, I allow myself to be sad in public. I'm a total public crier.
Good.
Absolutely.
Right? And I do storytelling, and occasionally I cry on stage, and I'm totally fine with that. Do you find, then you're talking about, you know, finding your joy and finding the happiness, do you find that it's women now in particular, based off of what's happening against females in the media and just kind of the reorganization of oppression towards women,
that you're allowed to be sad about this in public or in art? Do you have to be positive, or are you allowed to be
smile, girl?
Yeah,
I think you can be whatever you want to be.
Yeah,
but I've come to this conclusion that specifically as a white, shall we say middle-aged? I'll go with it. We'll go with middle-aged lady.
Own it.
Claim that. Fuck
own
that.
It.
That really like. This is going to sound like it's going to negate what I just said, but really, in terms of action, like, my feelings don't fucking matter. They don't. Like, you it's like.
But feelings motivate.
Of course they do. Of course they do. But I also, like, just like I don't want to, like, overemphasize the importance of art and beauty, I don't want to overemphasize the importance of my feelings either. The only where my feelings are important is when they become universal and we can all feel it together.
And that's sort of happening in a big way.
Yeah. And I think that's ultimately my goal as an artist is not so much self-expression as it is I want this communal experience.
Right. To create a community based on everyone's collective feeling.
Exactly.
Well, to possibly create action from that.
So I hear this, and I also so none of you actually know me. I should say to everybody who's listening to this, we connected over the internet through Frigid Festival and all that. But I just wanna say that I actually think that the goal of community, I used to live on a commune, is to, which is almost like being at camp all year round with adults who are having sex with each other. I think that it's to find, like, the individual, to, like, promote individuals to their highest potential within the community. Like, that's, to me, the goal of a community is to build up each individual. So it's, like, hard for me to think, like, there's going to be, like, one collective thing. Do you know
Well, no, there can be a collective experience of
individuals. Right. You're right. There's, like, well, there's that. And that's how we get, like, affinity groups and groups that are, like, to people who have a similar mission.
Right. And I mean, I definitely feel that, you know, let's take an issue. Like, if I'm going to go into a space to support an issue that doesn't directly affect me, if I go on a Black Lives Matter march, like, my fucking sorrow doesn't mean shit.
Yeah, for real. Fuck your white weighted tears.
Right. What matters is my body being there.
Right.
What matters is that, you know, I amplify whoever needs to speak at that moment.
Mm-hmm, for real.
And that's part of, like, a collective experience, is that I can set, you know, my frustration or my anger, or, like, the fact that I feel for people, that shit doesn't matter. It just matters that I show up.
Yeah, I hear that.
And that I become a sounding board and become an amplifier for what's going on around me.
For
and,
real.
And I learn from it.
I do want to play this really funny thing, just because you're talking about people who, like, think that art can save the world. Did y'all hear the Stranger Things?
David Harbour.
That speech? Okay, God, we're going to play it just because it's so funny. But he was just like, great acting can save the world. I was like, what is your problem? Wait, oh no, was I gonna play an ad right now? Oh, bye. Fucking A. Oh, that bit. Okay, we're gonna turn off the volume and let the ad play.
Yeah, I watched it in real time. My roommate and I were like, what is happening to, like, Winona Ryder's face right now? I am psyched on what you're doing right now, Winona. This is awesome.
She's everybody.
But she is.
But his speech is, like, exactly what you're talking about. Like, artists who think their art is, like, the best thing ever. I'm like, how why isn't it playing? Oh, is it speeding it up?
Wow. This is unreal. This is unreal. I'm supposed to start talking. I'm sorry. I'm sick. On behalf of this fearless and talented
feel free to
cast,
comment on it.
So why is it the man like that is speaking? Why did one? Why did Winona speak?
Netflix, well, because it's
because he's a man.
Matt well, no, because it's not. I mean, he's just an actor on the project. Cuba. Like he.
And I would just like to say that in light of all that's going on in the world today, it's difficult to celebrate the already celebrated Stranger Things. But this award from you, who take your craft seriously and earnestly believe, like me, that great acting can change the world, is a call to arms from our fellow craftsmen and
I
women
was just like, what
to
are
go
you,
deeper
what do you mean great
and through
acting?
Our art to battle, I mean, against fear, self-centeredness, and exclusivity.
It's not, it's a battle
look at self-centeredness after saying that great acting can change the world.
Empathetic and understanding society by revealing intimate.
Hey, we're done, but I just
in a tiny vest.
In a tiny vest on a horse.
I just thought that was so funny. Where he's like, great acting can change the world, but let's end self-centeredness. I was like,
thank you for making me a winner today.
Right. Yeah. So I want to, but something about this, like, feeling. So I want to know, what does feminine mean to you? Because I was talking to someone. A lot of people, you know, they're like, oh well, even if they're like the most radical people ever that I go to protest with, they're like, oh, I don't know if I like modern feminism or like white feminism. I don't know if I like feminism. I like to call it women's liberation. I'm like, well, it's not just about women. It's about like the demonization of the feminine. Like you're like saying you can cry in public and like people can't. I feel like. People are really hateful on anyone who has feelings.
I'm a super crier.
Yeah, me too. But I want to know, like, what do you think the feminine is? How would you define that for yourselves or in a societal or however?
I think it's whatever the fuck you want.
Right.
You know, I think you can be, I think anything that is quote unquote deemed as feminine can also be deemed as quote unquote masculine and anything. Yeah, it's whatever the fuck you want. Just because, I mean, the most seemingly macho cis male, like cis straight male, can be seen as feminine at times if he cries. That's fucking stupid. If human, we're all human. Humanism, I think, is the better term because we're all humans. Humans cry. Humans feel things. Humans are strong. Humans are weak. Humans are sad. Humans are happy. It's whatever the fuck you want it to be. That's what I think.
For real.
I'll get off my soapbox now.
It's okay.
There's not much I can add to that. I mean,
so that's the thing. You don't have to call it feminine. That's an important thing.
Right.
It doesn't have to be necessary. I mean, I agree with you. I agree with you altogether. But the reason why, for me, I'm just like, no, but call it feminism. Because, and I feel like such like a feminist fascist when I say that. But like when I feel like there are these like two sets of traits.
Yeah.
And some of them have been viewed as like powerful and are often rewarded in what has been labeled as the feminine.
Right.
Like emotional, sentimental, like
passive.
Those things have been demonized. And I feel like that's why I think feminism is about more than just women.
Yeah. Oh, no, I agree with that completely.
I think that there's just a point where we have this notion that those things are lacking in power. And they are not.
No.
Because these are the things that motivate us. These are the things that, and not just women. These are the feelings that motivate any human who wants change, who wants to make things better.
Yeah.
I mean, none of us would be here without somebody coming out of a pussy.
Cut
out of a stomach.
Which
is also considered, in
astrology, the stomach's very feminine.
But like, none of us would be here without like, that.
I don't have kids.
Nor do I.
But it just triggered in me some interesting question with, and I don't know if your play deals with this, and you don't have to give it a ton away, because obviously we're all going to go see it.
Yeah,
we're all going to go see everybody's shows, and you better. If you're listening to this episode, you don't go see a show. Yo, like, if you don't, you know, unless you, like, can't afford it or something, but, like, maybe I could try to help you. You should come see the shows. Anyway, continue.
Oh, so, the idea, though, that a vaginal birth is a more esteemed birth than a cesarean section. I know they're from my outsidely readings and a few friends who have kids, but even in motherhood there's levels to what's more motherly or like what's
just like there are some women who I once when my eldest I have three.
Oh, when, wow.
Yeah.
Awesome.
When my eldest was a newborn, I was in the park, and there was a woman bottle feeding her infant on the bench. And there were a couple of women, and this is part of why I wrote the play, there were a couple of women pushing their small toddlers in swings, like, within earshot of her, like, kind of giving her the side eye and going, talking about how great breastfeeding is and how... You know, I'd kill my mother for two more IQ points, you know, like, and breastfeeding can do that. And
oh,
breastfeeding
my God,
does
not everyone can breastfeed.
Right. And
painful for some people, right?
It's painful. Yeah, I will tell you, like, because I had this, you know, I'll try and make this short. But with my first, holy shit, someone should have stopped me. Someone should have stopped me because I was nuts. For a good 3 weeks, I was either attached to my child, attached to a breast pump, or because I had production issues. And and then I also had to pump, then take the stuff that I had pumped and tape a tube to my breast to supplement, because he needed to suckle in order to, and the latch was wrong. And if you know anything about breastfeeding, that turns, like, it turns your nipples into, it's like taking a cheese grater to it. And so you're like bleeding and trying to do this.
I just want to hug you right now. Like,
you need a mom.
And it's like, and that's true, because this is the point where somebody should have taken me aside and said, this is not helpful.
You don't need to do this.
You don't need to do this. It's not hatred toward your child to bottle feed.
No.
But this is the kind of atmosphere in certain communities. Like, you know,
all these harsh expectations on women.
Exactly. I mean, when my mother was raising her kids, then it was like, if you breastfed, you were just weird. And you and you were going to give your kids some weird sexual hangups if you breastfed them. So it's like, it just goes on and on. Like, it goes back and forth. And it's like, you know what? Can we just leave each other alone, please?
Do whatever the fuck you want.
What you're talking about is reminding me of somebody I had on the show, Darcy Leonard. You can check it out on audioboom.com if you go to the What Would Save the World channel. Darcy Leonard was talking about how mothering is not just like mothers. It's like mothering is like just like a nurturing behavior. Yeah. And I just feel like I wish more people were mothering. Just like, I feel like that's like not even like a gendered thing. Like, anybody can mother
if they want to.
And I don't know. That's like, that's what I personally think would save the world, is if people were a little bit more mothering towards people in general.
That's why I went to camp, right? Like, I wanted to be a positive impact in like
young women's lives.
Like, I commend you for having three kids. Nothing is coming out of this vagina that has arms or legs. Yeah. Like, it's just that I'm good. And
me too. I ain't doing that shit.
Camp was the closest I'll ever come to just wanting to somehow pass something, in my instance, like manners and thoughtfulness and a sense of self-sufficiency to kids that I thought, you could really use this. And that's, I guess I haven't thought of it in that manner until this moment, but I suppose that is a form of mothering.
Absolutely.
And
definitely.
I wouldn't consider myself motherly in the slightest. Like, I was still a beast when a girl come into my room crying 5 days later, and I would say, like, look, I don't even want to be your friend because you're crying right now, so you need to just get that shit together.
That sounds like a mom.
Go out there. And I felt like, at the same time, I was like, I feel really kind of mean right now, but at the same time, like,
tough love.
Girl, you gotta, shit.
Get your shit together.
What's she crying about? Her nanny was her MySpace boyfriend?
Their phones. Substantial portion of these girls cried because they wanted their phones, or they weren't having fun. Like, parents jokingly, but not jokingly, would write on Facebook, despite the fact they didn't realize that I could see everything they wrote, would say, like, oh my God, I bet Samantha's having withdrawal from her phone right now. And I was like, bitch, yes. Yeah. So hard that, in front of me.
That's so scary.
These girls, though, are so, I say they're so fucking dumb, because I feel mean and like I shouldn't put girls down, but at the same time, I was one and I was fucking dumb, but like these girls, just, it's a different time and place, and I didn't think I'd be my mom right now being like,
totally.
You know what? A mother came and she was like, showed up out of nowhere. She had a box of cookies and she was like, there. And I was like, well, shit, like, I can't turn you away. You're here with these cookies. She's like, well, I just want my daughter to be able to share. And I was like, all right, that sounds nice. So we bring the cookies in, and I open the box, and there are 12 cookies for 48 girls.
Oh.
And on the inside, I'm having a lot of feelings about this. And my first reaction is, well, how the fuck is she going to share 12 cookies, 40? Is she going to cut them? No, this girl ain't going to cut them. Like, right? Then second, I'm like, you said you're here to, like, make friends and responsibility and just empowerment. And I'm like, you are the problem, because you're giving your daughter 12 cookies.
She wanted her daughter to make friends with the right friends.
Right? And then I think about,
ew,
like,
so stupid.
You just bring 48 cookies. Like, why don't you know that, ma'am?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you invited everybody in kindergarten to the party, and, you know, she's 15, and you still have to bring 48 cookies. Like, it's the right thing to do. And in my mind, I was like, I heard my mother.
Be inclusive. Just be inclusive.
And it just, it killed me.
It would kill me, too. I'd be like, man, I can't stand people.
Instead, I ate the cookies.
Really?
Good for you.
Delicious. That's hilarious.
Then the girl was like, my cookies are gone. I was like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Ooh, wonder. Ooh. They Barry took them. Barry took like, them.
There was enough for the staff. So.
Yeah. So I was like, I can't hand these out.
No, so we're gonna do this thing. We have like 10 minutes left. So I promised other people who are in Frigid that I was going to play some promos for them. So what we're going to do is we're going to play a promo for this show called, I don't even know what it's called. We'll just play it. Here we go.
Hi, this is Joe Charnetsky, and I'm very excited to tell you that the 2017 Frigid Festival is presenting Joe Charnetsky's Funeral, my first solo show. I'm a Moth Slam winning writer, performer, and storyteller. I've been featured on the Moth podcast and have performed throughout New York City. I've given two eulogies in my life, and both were for men named Joe Charnetsky, my father and grandfather. When I attend the next Joe Charnetsky funeral, I won't have the opportunity to give the eulogy, so I need to tell my stories now. My father loved the small Pennsylvania town we were both raised in. Everything he wanted in the world was within a 5-mile radius of his house. His son, me, I felt differently. The life I wanted was not possible in our small town. I would need to leave as soon as possible, and once I moved away, I knew I would never live there again. Or so I thought. Joe Charnetsky's Funeral is a true story of four generations of fathers and sons, of little town blues, and swallowing your pride when you do have to go home again. I'm guaranteeing laughs with the possibility of tears and an outside chance of personal reflection. Joe Charnetsky's Funeral will be performed at the Crane Theater on East 4th Street, February 17th, 19th, 21st, 24th, and March 2nd as part of the 2017 Frigid Festival. For showtimes and to buy tickets for Joe Charnetsky's Funeral, go to horsetrade.info now. That's horsetrade.info. Joe Charnetsky's Funeral. My whole life has been leading up to this.
All right, that was like my father's voicemail. My father is an actor. I'm sorry, Joe Charnetsky. We had to make fun of you just a little bit. I feel like I just crushed an actor ego. Oh well. All right, so here's another one. So, inspired by the sitcom Golden Girls, Natasha packs her bags and naively embarks on a journey from the Austrian countryside to America. Her dreams of making it in show business are challenged as she's exploited in Los Angeles, becomes homeless in Washington Heights before making a decision that alters her life forever. Evidence that the American dream is still kicking and alive. So it is not clear what this show is called. But you should check that out. It's inspired by the Golden Girls. I'm sure that's a blurb on a, maybe she emailed, I don't know, whatever. I can't fucking, I am such a lazy little host right now. All right, so then here's another one. We got Luggage Packed, Hopes High, and Wheels Up on the Journey of a Lifetime that goes off track right from the start. A heartbreak halfway around the world causes a stranded guy to learn international travel on the fly while accidentally circumnavigating the globe, including an unexpected detour through a new friend's home in Abu Dhabi. Is that Dubai? That's not Dubai. D-H-A-B-I.
Abu Dhabi?
Abu Dhabi. I'm so uncultured. Twin Cities performer Scott Moore performs his one-man show Break Your Heart, the transcontinental heartbreak of one hapless man that becomes a universal story of love and loss through music, original animation, and a healthy dose of honest, hilarious self-deprecation. Having premiered the show at the Minnesota Fringe Festival to great success, Scott is absolutely ecstatic to bring his tale of love, loss, and an accidental trip around the world to New York City. Discount $5 off the $15 ticket price for anyone who brings a copy of a breakup letter and gets their tickets at the door. That's pretty awesome. The dates are Wednesday 2:15, 5:30 p.m. Saturday 2:18, 3:50 p.m. Saturday 2:19, 12:10 p.m. Tuesday 2:21, 5:30 p.m. Thursday 2:23, 7:10 p.m. Saturday 2:25, 10:30 p.m. Is that the last one? I gotta scroll. Okay, great. And there's a Facebook event they sent me, which I will try to remember to share on my Twitter, which is 2KEDALOW. And the number two with a K, yeah. I'll try to share that event during the show while you're listening. I will, you know, ask questions and shit. Okay, then here's one more. Frigid will be presenting this absolutely incredible mind reading show this year. Mark Tolan is the top book mind reader in the U.S. and Canada and makes his living performing for Fortune 500 companies around the world. In his show, he presents unbelievable psychological illusions that will blow your mind, including guest memories, birthdays, names of loved ones, even putting his skills to the test with a large bet that could cost him a great deal of money. Wow. You can catch Mark's show at Frigid at 217, 224, 220. 26, 227, and 32, and 34 at various times. For more information, go to buy tickets at horsetrade.info. That's where you should go for everybody's tickets. You can under St. Mark's is at 94 St. Mark's Place, and then the Crane is at either at 84 or 85 East 4th Street, but you know it's right above the East Village Comedy Club, and it's the same building as some bar was SKG or something.
KGB.
So yeah. So we have just 5 minutes. I want each of you to tell us where they can go see your show and what days if you know them off the top of your head.
Oh shit.
If you don't, just say your title, all these things you can find at horsetrade.info.
Yeah. You can find Buyers Remorse. It starts this Thursday, that is the 16th at 10:30, the following Saturday at 10:30, Sunday the 26th at 12:10 PM. March 1st at 5:30 and March 3rd at 8:50 PM. And that's at Under St. Mark's.
18 Days, 48 Girls is at the Under St. Mark's Theater. And we are February 18th, 23rd, 25th, and March 3rd and 4th at different times just to fuck with you.
And
I'm at Sam's Club, which is at the Crane. And I've got show times at 2:17, at 8:30. 2:18 at 1:40, 2:20 at 10:30, 3:01 at 8:50, 3:05 at 3:30.
Awesome. Thank you, all three of you, for being here. Why don't you say your names real quick so we can hear that, so we just know.
My name is Mara.
Courtney.
Bree.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. That just sounded like the go-around in Rent, if you know what I'm talking about. That's a dark joke right there. Anyway, so... Okay, so you've been listening to What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm here every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m. You can check out my other episodes on iTunes or on audioboom.com. If you're ever interested in being on the show, you can email Took, T-O-O-K, at RadioFreeBrooklyn.com. I am down to talk about just about anything that relates to the question, what would save the world, especially if you disagree with me, because I'm really good at debate, I promise you. What else is there? I was going to say, oh yeah, you should go see all these Frigid shows. If you would like to take me on a date to one of these shows, that would be really funny. And I've never actually offered myself to go on a date on this show, but I just decided to do it because I love horse trade theater. Let's go on a date to one of these shows. Email me. I just gave you my email. Also, you can catch me on Mondays at Brooklyn Bandstand at 4 p.m.
Oh, my God.
My memory. There's an open mic. That is at Under St. Mark's every Tuesday. Starts at about 9 p.m. And you can put your name in the hat at about 9 p.m. And names get drawn at about 9:45. And you can perform whatever you want. And you can come see me likely get naked. Probably not, actually. I haven't done that in a while. But it'll happen one of these days, I promise. Like I said, we've been listening to What Would Save the World. You can follow me on Twitter at 2KEDALOW. And you can tweet at me about anything you want. You can tweet at me about this show. And thank you all so much for being here. This has been awesome. Talking about women and feminism and this and that and theater and fuck Donald Trump. Fuck Donald Trump. Punch Nazis. Also tonight, there's going to be a fundraiser with the activist organization Hoods for Justice at the Footlight Bar. That's at 465 Seneca Avenue. And we have a singer, Kashish. We have a belly dancer named Shin Shin. We have a DJ. DJ Mike Magone is coming. And it's, you know, dress code is 60% glitter and or Nia. Not mandatory, but you should come. And it is a fundraiser for the people arrested at Disrupt J20 in the inauguration day in D.C. So... all the money's going to go to that. It's a sliding scale of $5 to $10, but no one will be turned away for lack of funds. It should be a hell of a lot of fun. We're going to have a huge dance party. We're going to drink, and we're going to rock it. They're great people. You should really be there. I certainly will be. Thank you so much for listening to What Would Save the World.